Hello and welcome to Linux Lads, Season 6, Episode 1. As usual, I'm your host, Shane.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Mike.
That was a bit prima donna of me to say your host, I guess. You guys are hosts too.
Oh, thank you.
So it's good to be back. A little bit of a false start last week. That was my fault. Went on a distro hopping odyssey and completely, I don't know what I did to my computer, but my my resolution was like Fisher Price size on my computer. I could, like, one window was taking up 3/4 of the screen and I still couldn't see anything properly. So yeah, but anyway, I just installed the proprietary drivers and it was grand. But yeah, so we got over that. Took a long ass break over Christmas. Did nothing. What about you guys?
One thing I did do was I was working the Christmas week and I was off the following week, so the week leading up to New Year's. And in the back of my mind, I realized that I had Grand Theft Auto 5 on Steam, and I pretty much did nothing but play it for that entire week, and I completed it in less than a week. So that game is so good and it's so addictive. I've forgotten how good that game is.
Mike, you got yourself a new toy, it seems.
Yeah, I decided that my super laptop is a bit too big to drag it around everywhere, and by everywhere I mean on the sofa and into the bedroom and stuff like that. So I got a little 11.6-inch laptop with a touch screen that you can turn around, and it turns into a tablet. It's from a Chinese company called TechLast, the F5 model. And it's a decent thing for the price. It was about, I think, definitely under 300 euros. I'm still waiting on the active pen. There are some people, some projects that to enable the proper hybrid experience. So I'm still, kind of putting it together. I put OpenSUSE on it at first because it was the only a distro that came out of the box with working Wi-Fi on it, which, it has got some Realtek chipset for Wi-Fi. It's not great. But OpenSUSE worked. But then I went distro shopping again, landed on Endeavor OS that I tried previously. What bugged me about it, and this is actually an interesting tip, right, which I didn't know. I'm sure more erudite listeners of ours will know, but if you have one of these distros that let you encrypt the whole disk, and then you restart it, and the thing just drags through the encryption, and it takes ages to decrypt the disk, if you are willing to compromise a little on the on the security, then when you are doing the partitioning, just don't encrypt the whole thing. Have a separate /EFI and a separate boot, and then separate root partitions. I'm using BTRFS, but it can be anything, right? And encrypt only the root partition. It might complain that this is not the safest of setups, but I'm willing to make that compromise. The root partition and the home on it is still encrypted, but when you then restart it, instead of having to decrypt through the first bootloader, you are decrypting after, when the boot partition is loaded and everything, and it's much, much snappier. That's, I think, the out of the box experience in Fedora, by the way. So that's you learn something every day, right?
Everyone's got new toys. Yeah. Over the holidays / Christmas / Hanukkah / Kwanzaa
/ Festivus.
Festivus for the rest of us.
Thanks God is over.
I got it. Oh yeah, and today's the day. Yeah, we're recording this on the 20th of January, so the Orange Man is finally out today as well. But just thought I'd drop that in. I picked myself up a touchscreen for the Pi 4. I have a Pi 1, 2, 3, and 4. So I just thought, if I want to use the touchscreen, I want this to be a little mini computer thing, then I'm going to put the best Pi in there. So it's the 8 gig model as well. And it's a really nifty little case that I got. I'll provide the link so you guys can have a look at it on the PiHut.com. and the case is just beautiful. Like, it's really nice. It's got two back covers on it. You can have like a solid one with a little optional cutout for the GPIO pins. But the one that I put on it is one with holes in it for ventilation. But then it's also got like a little tiny fan that that goes into the GPIO pins. And yeah, it doesn't actually make too much noise. And what's really nifty is you can, depending on what headers on the GPIO you put it on, it can be either high speed or low speed. So you put it on like the 3.3 volt rail or the 5 volt rail, and then the other one on a ground pin. There's several ground pins, so it's grand. You have choice, but yeah, it's really nice. I put on low speed, obviously, because I don't really feel the need to cool a Pi all that much. I know the Pi 4 gets hot, but I don't think it's going to get that hot. I'm not going to be overclocking a Pi or anything. But yeah, overall, took me a bit of fiddling to put it together, to cable manage it and get like the jumper wires kind of all snuggled in together, and the ribbon cables that are really fiddly to put in.
Oh, I hate those.
But yeah, they're so bad. We need a better solution for that. But I also treated myself to an Arduino. What the hell is going on today? Arduino starter kit. That didn't work. I can't flash the sketches to it because it just can't. My computer can't see the Arduino. I can't communicate with it. So I'm going to have to come back to that. I've only tried it once, so I'll provide updates on that in the next episode. But yeah, also went on a distro, as I mentioned earlier, went on a distro hopping odyssey, which led to the issues last week. So decided I was going to try Ubuntu Studio yet again for the third time, because it's now KDE Plasma. They have a KDE Plasma version, or they moved to it like it was XFCE beforehand, but now it's KDE Plasma. I thought, maybe it's okay now. Maybe it's time for me to finally get into KDE again. Because I've always loved the idea, but I just can't do it. And yeah, I lasted a week on Ubuntu Studio KDE Plasma version because it's uncanny valley for me. There's just something wrong, but I just don't know what it is. Do you guys know what I'm talking about there? I mean, I know you guys like KDE, but there's just, I don't know. There's something, I just can't put my finger on it.
I think KDE doesn't hide away problems.
I think that's part of it. Yeah, it like there are some options where you're like, who the fuck would possibly like want to? I know, I appreciate that the option is there. I'm like, that's really nifty that they have an option for that, and it's very clever. But it's just, can I have an optional toggle to hide all of these things when I don't need them?
That's the second thing, right? So they give you options. And so it was like, there was somewhere today on Linux Unplugged or Action News earlier, they were saying KDE had two choices to make, either smoother animations or more stable rendering, right? And they decided, okay, we just let the user choose. Which is like, that's why the settings seems to multiply every time you open it. But also they don't hide problems, right? So GNOME, in my experience, will not show you no GNOME distribution will ever show you near as many error messages and alerts as KDE. Yeah, I opened the Fedora 33 on KDE and I booted, right? And I'm getting all these messages. This is a problem. This is an issue. Something crashed. Something fell apart. But nothing's wrong, right? So that kind of creates the thing that the system is broken. Yet, like, I'm pretty sure that even like Windows and Mac OS, they all have issues. Something's broken constantly inside it. There's issue. Things stop working. Things stop. Things crash. Things restart. They just don't tell you. Same on like most Linux distributions. It's just KDE decides to, I think anyway, that seems to be the thing. Like they don't hide this stuff. They say, look, this is, I mean, it's more, I use it, I'm not a fanboy, right? I use it because I jump between GNOME and this. I like the GNOME workflow more, and I like the KDE is just more useful to me. It lets me do more things, and I sometimes enjoy the craziness. I could try Cinnamon with the same thing. It just never attracted me. There's nothing insane about it. Like, it's good. It works, but it's not KDE. KDE is insane sometimes. It's Cinnamon is just boring to me anyway. I know people love it.
The key thing for me, I guess, is cohesion of everything. like the theming of apps. I like it. I like the theming to be consistent throughout the desktop environment. And I feel that that doesn't always happen on KDE. Like I had terrible trouble with the dark themes, like, cause I love dark themes, but they're just, they're not always implemented very well. I mean, like I tried Breeze Dark and then Ubuntu Studio Dark. And I think, I can't remember which one, but on one of them, it was like changing the color of text fields, but not changing the color of the text. So I couldn't see what I was typing and stuff like that. Just little things like that. So that's what put me off it. It's like KDE is, it's a desktop environment for grown-ups.
One thing I will say about the changing the text field but not changing the text is sometimes, I'm not saying you hadn't tried this, but sometimes that requires a log out and log back in order for that to update. So okay. If you're doing it on the fly, if you're going, oh, that looks shit, I'm going to switch to something else, it may have worked. You just had to log out and log back in. Another thing is, yeah, on the consistency, I'm well with you because I'm running KDE at the moment, and I sometimes install GTK apps. I mean, in fact, Manjaro, its package manager, the GUI package manager, is a GTK app. Sure, it looks okay with its default theme, but I prefer their default theme is like black header bars and like light background for the rest of the application, which it looks nice, but I prefer dark everything. So, and then I switched to Breeze Dark, which is a very nice looking theme, but the thing is, there's no GTK equivalent.
I'm looking at the KDE. So in the settings, you can say, get new GNOME GTK application styles. And there seem to be, like, if you look for Breeze, you get a lot of results. And I thought that was it, but they are just like, they are not quite the same, right?
I spent about 20 minutes looking through this. So I didn't spend hours, but I spent like 20 minutes and I couldn't find something. So I might throw it out there to the listeners as well. Feel free to email show@linuxlads.com. Hey, if you are able to, if you know of a really good, consistent, like Breeze Dark theme for GTK that would look consistent with Breeze Dark on KDE, or feel free to suggest themes for both desktop environments that would look consistent with each other, and I might try out both of them. As long as they look consistent with each other, I'll definitely try them out.
Hi, Shane here, just reminding everybody of our socials. You can get us on @LinuxLads on Twitter. You can go to linuxlads.com/mastodon. You can find us on Telegram. We have a pretty active group there, the Linux Lads group on Telegram. Just search for it. You should find it. In the Steam community, you can search for Linux Lads podcast. We're there also. You can email us on show@linuxlads.com. You can even go to our merch store and get a nice t-shirt or a mug or something like that on linuxlads.com/store. If you want to just sing us a small donation towards our server costs or anything like that, you can go to linuxlads.com/donate. Okay, back to it. So 2021 might bring a production-ready Plasma Wayland session.
Speaking of KDE.
So they are obviously trying to make Wayland work for KDE. And which developer was it now? Was it Nate Graham or one of the developers went on when basically live and said that this year the focus is going to be, among other things, Wayland, because they are, and I tried Wayland actually on KDE, and it's not too bad. Like, you know, providing that you are not using NVIDIA drivers, providing that you are not using, I think dual monitor setup is a problem as well. And there might be a lot more edge cases, but I think I used it on that little computer because that has only Intel graphics, right? There's no NVIDIA in there. And on OpenSUSE, out of all things, and that worked remarkably well. Like, it was Wayland with X-Wayland, so OpenSUSE KDE has got three options, Plasma, Plasma on Wayland, and Plasma Wayland with X-Wayland. And that that just, you know, worked. The X applications worked well. The whatever he was using, Wayland, that worked well as well. So I assume they will be like they will get it by this time next year. It's possible that several distributions, maybe including KDE Neon, will run Wayland out of the box. I think Fedora 33 is actually meant, 34, sorry, is actually meant to run Wayland out of the box, isn't it?
I've heard that also. I believe that is the case. I've never actually tried Wayland. I've no egg in the race at all. It's by all means it's supposed to be the future, it's supposed to be much better, yeah, and I can see the path that is going on because Xorg is old, crusty, and yada yada. I get the philosophical reason for doing it, like, let's start afresh, let's start new, everything like that. And if Fedora is doing it by default, which I believe it is, the only caveat is that I tend to like to game occasionally, and the last Phoronix benchmark that I saw, I'm not saying it's the latest one, the last one that I saw, it was a couple of months ago now, said that gaming on Wayland was like a 50% FPS hit versus Xorg. So there's definitely refinements to be done. But by all means, if once they figure out those kind of things, I'll be more than willing to try it out and switch.
And I was wrong. Apparently Plasma supports NVIDIA GPUs with proprietary drivers on Wayland with no configuration needed as of Plasma 5.20. And yeah, Fedora 34 with KD on it. That's going to be Wayland first. But yeah, if you say that, if you say, Connor, that you are getting performance hit on your gaming, then that's definitely a reason for many people to stay put with Xorg.
Potentially, that was the last. I've never actually tried it myself, but that was the last benchmarks that I saw from Phoronix. They said they showed a 50% hit on frames per second Wayland versus Xorg.
So, before we get into meatier topics, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to the winner of our Cyberpunk giveaway. As you might remember, we were doing a competition to give away a copy of Cyberpunk 2077, and Amolith, a friend of the show, won the game. So I didn't really know how to give that more pomp and circumstance, but yeah, he won it. So congratulations to him.
I had a Jitsi chat with DM, who's the person who's giving it away. Thank you, DM. He was the person who purchased it and then gave it to the lucky winner. And DM was there live during the Jitsi chat, as I did the random number generation. So if DM was satisfied that it was all above board, which it was, then that is your test. The person who was purchasing the game was satisfied that it was all done fairly. So
stop the steal.
Jesus Christ. You know, just literally today, Nick, who was on the Nick from the Linux Experiment, who was on the show a year ago, I think, he tweeted, "Congratulations to the United States for switching from Temple OS to a sane distro. The whole world feels a lot safer."
So, in completely different news, to change the topic abruptly, Corellium posts a very early Linux port to the Apple M1 Max, and apparently Ubuntu is running too. So the developer, I believe it's the developer who said that he, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's the developer who said that he would do this for full time. Or it could be another developer, apologies that I'm not that up to speed with it, said that thanks to what has been learned from the Corellium project, they managed to port Ubuntu over to the M1 platform as well.
It's interesting, all the fanfare around this. I mean, the really low-level stuff I don't follow so much, honestly, but... like, is there, like, I know, putting Linux on a Mac is a lot of people's dream. But why?
Well, specifically this Mac, like I think somebody reported, I don't know how many hours of battery life, no fan. The thing is fast for, you know, and for a Mac, the MacBook Air is relatively cheap, right? It's the fact, it's not that it's like everything else they do. It's not that it's like mind-boggling new stuff, but they just took something that you could do before. You could make a you could make it on a laptop, no problem. But it does, they just did it in such a way that it functions really well. Whatever reason you might have to buy it, for the use cases that those devices are made for, portability, battery life, performance per watt, stuff like this, it will function really well. Like Mike Dominic from Code Radio bought one and he's smitten with it, right? So that's probably until he manages to pour some beverage into it as his way. But so the thing is, we want Linux on this because A, it's good looking hardware, and compared to the Ultrabooks, it's not even that, it's about the same money. And second, we want this battery life, and we want to be able to do this on this laptop, because if this is where the industry is heading and everybody's going ARM, well, that's going to be a shit show, because ARM is much more locked down platform than x86. So you need the driver. Every Linux on every ARM is a different thing. So you will need if the projects that are working on this will manage to run Linux on Apple hardware out of all things, then everything else should kind of work. And that's a good thing, right? Plus, people are just interested in doing that. That's the new sexy thing. What do you do? Oh, I think I could put a Linux on it. There was somebody saying, like, no, we shouldn't do that. We should definitely pull our resources and make sure that we put resources to a better goal. No, people like to do what they like to do. That's what Linux is about.
I suppose if you stick a transistor to a rock, people will try to put Linux on it.
It's good. A toaster. Awesome.
I'm not one to needlessly or frivolously defend Apple, but I will in this case. Was apparently they and it's not just apparently, the benchmarks are out there. They hired the right people who are CPU architecture experts and everything like that, and they have pulled off legitimately industry scaring performance out of this thing. It's rivaling current Intel and AMD top end processors, and so their performance curve is gone up exponentially. In other words, they're saying, okay, they should not have progressed in performance this quickly, this fast. And the reason why is because they're developing it all in-house, and they have the CPU architecture experts made the relevant acquisitions, they made the relevant hires, they made the relevant whatever, and they've been working on this. So this has been a long time coming. So this is not the usual Apple snazzy marketing around mediocre hardware or average.
I'm definitely sold on Macs as hardware. I do love using. It was a totally leading question. I just wanted to see what you guys thought.
They actually enabled people to boot custom kernel on it. Like I think a few days back, they literally so you can. This whole thing, putting Linux on the M1, they could have kind of prevented it, by the way. Yeah, they could have said, no, you cannot run, because they do that on the iOS devices. You cannot put Linux on iOS. Well, no, actually, that's right. You can put Linux on the iPhone. Somebody just did again recently on the iPhone 7, but it's a massive hack, and Apple don't want you to do that. But with this, they actually enable. They don't help you. They don't, you know, they don't give you drivers or anything. Don't be stupid. But they do let people put their own kernel on it. And it is just good. Like, you know, and you have to ask yourself, where is Intel? You know, Intel, I think they just contracted TSMC, because Intel themselves can't do 5-nanometer chip, and TSMC are going to do that for them, you know. Where are there are other manufacturers. You know, I'm sure they will follow. I'm sure there's going to be an ARM, a very powerful ARM Windows PC very soon. Hopefully, this will translate into very powerful Linux ARM PCs because, you know, the battery life. And I was, I've been saying this, I just, that I don't like the performance on ARM because everything is a bit slow. But this is, and this is not just, it's not just that the thing is powerful, but there's also, there's a lot of co-processors in there. So it kind of delegates the tasks to different chips within the chipset. I don't remember what they call it, but basically the memory on this device is shared between everything. So there is no, there's not much switching between RAM and something else. I don't know. I read an article about it. It was very interesting, but I should have refreshed before I said it. But basically, it's a technical feat, and people are trying to put Linux on it, and that's very good.
That about wraps things up. Next week, we will be back. So we're not going weekly like Late Night Linux. We're just the delay meant that we had to record this week instead. But we will, you'll be getting two in a row this time. Very spoiled. Because we will have, hopefully, if things don't change, we will have a guest next week, all to be revealed. We're not going to say who it is just yet in case they cancel. But
we'll be upwardly mobile.
Exactly. So we have locked them in for next week. So we can't avoid that. So tune in for that. It's going to be very interesting. It's going to be emotional. And this has been the Linux Lads. I'm Shane.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Mike.
Ah, shit, I did the Linux Lads part first. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.